from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. President Trump continued his Twitter attacks on Special Counsel Robert Mueller today amid news reports that Mueller's team has interviewed the White House counsel for some 30 hours as part of its Russia probe. We'll get the latest from NPR's Ron Elving and Politico's Josh Gerstein. Then at 9:30, can low-carbohydrate diets like Atkins or the ketogenic diet actually be shortening our lives? According to a new study, quite possibly. We'll talk about the health effects of popular diets that encourage meat intake and restrict carbs. That's next, after this news. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. John Brennan, the former CIA director and critic of President Trump, says he may sue the Trump administration for removing his security clearance. The president continued to go after Brennan on Twitter, but 175 former national security officials signed a letter today saying the country will be weakened if there's a political litmus test for security experts. Coming up, we talk about the president's battle with the national security establishment. We're also going to get into the latest on the Russia investigation and the Manafort trial, which is ongoing. And in fact, joining us is Josh Gerstein. Josh Gerstein, who is there, senior White House reporter for Politico. Josh, welcome.
Hey, Michael. Good to be with you again.
Good to have you with us. And also good to have Ron Elving, who is joining us from Washington, senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk for the NPR News. Morning, Ron.
Good to be with you, Michael.
Good to have you both with us. Josh, let me get the latest from you on the Manafort trial, because there's a lot at stake here. We've got 18 counts. We've got a judge who said there has to be pretty much no doubt about, and there's a lot of speculation at this point about what's going on. It's been going on for a fairly long time. What are you thinking?
Well, so the trial has been going really for 2 weeks. It sort of spanned over 3 weeks, and we've had two full days of deliberation last week, and then Monday was the first day this week, obviously, of deliberation. So about 2.5 days so far. Most people I've spoken to, lawyers and so forth, are not surprised that with 18 counts it would take a jury this long. What is a little bit unusual here is sort of the public atmosphere. We have had the president on sort of a tirade on Twitter against the Mueller investigation, calling this trial in particular of Manafort a very sad day. And then also a couple comments from the president that Mueller's investigation is ruining people's lives. And so this is not a sequestered jury. The judge has told them to not consume any media, although that's, I think, easier said than done in this day and age. But there are real questions, I think, about whether the jury can really be expected to ignore the atmospherics when you have the president of the United States during jury deliberations expressing a pretty clear view on what outcome he thinks Manafort deserves in this case, which apparently is an acquittal.
And there's also, Ron Elving, been some concern about the way not only Manafort's defense attorney, Kevin Downing, has been talking about, concern about violation of ethics, because he certainly made it clear that this is indeed linked to, in fact, it's on a lot of the papers that have gone through to the special investigation. But what about the president's role in this? I mean, there's been talk about his being essentially guilty of tampering with the jury by the statements that he's made, doing jury tampering.
The judge in this case, Judge Ellis, has tried hard to keep Donald Trump's name out of this trial, to not make this a trial of the president or about the presidency. He wants to keep the focus on Paul Manafort, who is in the dock and who is the person accused of all these counts of tax evasion and bank fraud. That's extremely difficult to do. If you really wanted to do that, perhaps it would have been necessary to sequester the jury, try to keep them sealed off from the world, from the president's Twitter feed, and that was not done. So in this particular instance, the difficulty of keeping a jury pure, as it were, during the trial itself, let alone all the impressions they may have gotten prior to the trial, it's very difficult to find a jury in Northern Virginia that is not aware of Robert Mueller's investigation. So given all of that, it's going to be endlessly debated whether or not this particular jury was able to reach a fair decision uninfluenced by all the people who are attempting in one way or another to put a thumb on the scales.
Well, and the thumb has gone on the scales from the president himself by talking about Manafort being a good man and this being sad and all the rest of that. But why should we care about this trial? What's significant about it in your judgment, Ron? I mean, it in many ways has significantly nothing to do with the Mueller investigation from many perspectives, although it has everything to do with their opening things up and bringing forth the prosecution. Yeah.
Yes. And this judge also, in the early going, when there was an attempt to just dismiss the charges, seemed to be considering something along those lines because he was uncomfortable with having his courtroom used to squeeze Paul Manafort to make him flip on the president, to use sort of vernacular ways of referring to these legal proceedings. Everybody sort of understood that if Paul Manafort decided to go Rick Gates, his deputy's route, and testify that all of this activity had been going on, he could possibly be of great use to Robert Mueller's team, make connections between the president or the president's family or other elements of the president's campaign and Russians, and that could be very, very useful for Robert Mueller. So the idea was that this was all being loaded on Paul Manafort so that he would be forced to be cooperative with Mueller, and Judge Ellis didn't like that, but he did let the charges go ahead, and he has conducted the trial. So at this point, is there still a possibility that Paul Manafort, if he's convicted, could decide to testify against the president? Yes, of course. Could the president also decide to pardon Paul Manafort? Some people thought they perceived a offer of a pardon in some of the president's tweets over the last few days, that he's setting the world up for that moment when he pardons Paul Manafort and possibly Michael Cohen.
And Josh Gerstein, what are your thoughts about, you've been following the trial. There's a lot of testimony by Rick Gates, who can certainly be impugned given his track record, but a lot of documents as well. It seems to be contingent on those two things primarily. That is the believability or credibility of Rick Gates and all of those documents produced by the prosecution.
Yeah, I mean, the defense has tried to make it almost entirely about Rick Gates because they find him to be easier to discredit. He has taken a plea deal. He pled guilty to two felonies. He also admitted that he had embezzled money or inflated his expense charges when working for Manafort for somewhere on the order of several hundred thousand dollars. The defense suggested it might be millions of dollars. I'm not clear where they're coming up with that exactly. But so there's plenty to diminish Gates' credibility, as there usually is whenever you have somebody who, as Ron says, flips and becomes a cooperating witness and pleads guilty in exchange for leniency. And so the question in some sense is whether this case could float simply based on the documents alone. There's 399 exhibits in front of the jury. You're talking about tax returns, financial documents, letters, profit and loss statements for Manafort's business, many of which the prosecution says were essentially forged either by Manafort personally or by Gates acting at Manafort's direction. And one way this does tie in to the campaign, there was a little bit of mention of Manafort trading on his influence in Trump circles to try to get one of the bankers who gave him a loan to try to get that banker a job in the Trump administration. So there was some proof of that. But the broader narrative is one the prosecution has painted that Manafort was in financial distress in 2016. He really hadn't had any work to speak of for a couple years since his favored group in Ukraine went down and into defeat and was then many of them were forced out of the country with President Yanukovych. And so he was really in financial straits in 2016, the government says. And, of course, that's the time where he went to work for the Trump campaign for free. And that's one of the great mysteries here is how was Manafort expecting to monetize this service that he did on the Trump campaign? If he was, would it be through ordinary Washington lobbying or would it be through something more nefarious than that? And that seems to be the subtext of the prosecution's charges.
If you've just joined us, we're doing a Monday Political News in Review, and not only talking about the Manafort trial, we're also going to be talking about security clearances, and we also want to talk about Don McGahn and what's going on, the private attorney of President Trump, with his testimony to the Mueller investigation, apparently 30 hours of it. If you have something you'd like to add to the conversation, we certainly would welcome hearing from you. And let me give you a toll-free number. You can join us now at that number. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. So please feel free to be part of the program. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum at kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is at kqedforum. And let me go back to Ron Elving about, I said personal counsel. I must have been thinking about Rudy Giuliani, who now has given what has appropriately been called a meme he may not have wanted to give about the truth, and truth is not the truth. What about the White House counsel and his role in all this Security Council testimony? Actually, I want to go, Ron, to you on that, but let's talk about security clearances, first of all, in general. There's a threat of a lawsuit now that's come forward, essentially put forward by John Brennan. The latest is a threat from the president that Bruce Orr, who also has been threatened with having his security clearance taken away. And this all seems to be really highly retaliatory. And we've got hundreds of former high intelligence officials signing essentially a letter condemning the president and saying that this is an bridging free speech and so forth. Is that going to have any effect, first of all?
Let's go back to that word retaliatory that you used. Several years ago when he was running for president and Donald Trump had been attacked by someone or other and he had lashed back at them, his wife, Melania, said, "You're going to have to understand this about my husband. When someone attacks him, he hits back 10 times harder." And that goes back to some of the training that Donald Trump had at the tutelage of a guy named Roy Kahn, who was an extraordinary, powerful attorney in New York City.
You mean Roy Cohen, who worked for the McCarthy?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. C-O-H-N. And Roy had come out of the whole McCarthy thing as kind of the hardest of all of the weapons that McCarthy used on people. A tough guy, a tough lawyer, handled all kinds of different clients, and was something of a mentor to Donald Trump in the 1970s and 80s. And this guy really taught him the idea that if somebody gives you a problem, you create problems for that person in a much greater degree. You've got to be super aggressive in retaliation. And we have seen this again and again with President Trump, and now most recently with John Brennan, who has been, no question, a harsh critic of the president and who has said, among other things, that the president's claims of no collusion with the Russians are, quote, hogwash. That's pretty strong talk for somebody who has been allowed to see what the intelligence community has gathered about Donald Trump.
And forgive me, Ryan, he also called Donald Trump a traitor. I mean, lest we forget.
Yes, he has used the strongest possible terms in talking about the president. So there's real provocation here, and the president is hitting back, as Roy would have taught him to do, and doing everything he can to hurt John Brennan. John Brennan is saying, I'm within my rights to be doing everything that I'm doing. If you take away my security clearance, which is a great deal of my participation in America's intelligence structure, if you take away, in a sense, a part of my livelihood, and you're doing it only because I'm speaking the truth and you don't like it, I've got a lawsuit.
And there's also, Josh Gerstein, an executive order that was signed by Clinton and updated by President George W. Bush that spells out what should be done in conjunction with security clearances and what the standards should be. And the standards have not been met here by the light of all these intelligence officers who signed this letter, and there's been no due process. And one has to think about the irony of Rob Porter and Michael Flynn and, for that matter, Jared Kushner in terms of delays about security clearance that they had that were not taken away. But again, I get back to this basic question. What kind of effect is this going to have on this president or his would-be retaliatory actions? Bruce Orr is next by his standards.
Right. I mean, these are extraordinary actions that he is taking, and in the case of Orr, proposing or says he's on the verge of taking to strip people of their security clearances for anything other than some sort of straight-up security-related violation, just because of views that they've expressed, no matter how strong those views may be or how accurate or inaccurate they might be under the circumstances. But look, you said, Michael, it's an executive order that President Clinton signed. And the reality is That means it's a process that's governed by presidential order, and President Trump is free to revoke that executive order, to revise it, and he's probably free to ignore it if people are acting on the president's direct instruction to strip somebody of their clearance. There's very wide latitude, and the Supreme Court has pretty much said that when it comes to security clearances, the courts are not going to get involved, that they're a subject matter that courts are uniquely poorly suited to police, whether a particular individual deserves a clearance or doesn't. But again, I can't think of a situation where they've really been confronted by something like this, where they'd have somebody coming in and saying, my clearance was taken from me solely for political reasons and with the intent of sending a message to people about their public protected First Amendment statement. So I'd say Brennan actually still faces an uphill battle in the courts, but it may be a case that is a plausible one, even though the courts have rejected similar complaints from people about their security clearances being pulled.
And I want to get to you, our callers, and also many of you emailing in and posting your thoughts. In fact, you can do that right now online at kqed.org/forum or join us online, at least on the telephone lines. The number to call is toll-free, 866-733-6786, and we'll go to your calls forthwith. I just want to go back to Ron Elving, though, and Ron, get your thoughts about what's been breaking with Don McGahn. About 30 hours of testimony, the president says, essentially, I gave him permission, you know, and I don't have anything to be concerned about here. He's not a rat like John Dean. It's a funny word for a president of the United States to use, especially about somebody who told the truth about Watergate. But let's try to sort this out a bit. I mean, there's speculation in the New York Times, which, of course, the president calls fake news, that all Don McGahn is after is protecting himself from an obstruction of justice charge. But Don McGahn apparently has intimated that he wants to protect the office of the presidency. What do you make out of it, Ron?
John Dean was the White House counsel back in Richard Nixon's presidency. And as the White House counsel, he got involved in the White House's reaction to the Watergate burglary at the Democratic National Headquarters. It turns out that that burglary was being done at the behest of the president's reelection committee back in 1972. And John Dean, as he learned this, realized progressively that he was being set up to be the guy who looked like he had covered all that up. Covered up the connections as the White House counsel. Now, what John Dean came to realize in his own mind and heart, that he was not really the president's lawyer. He was really the White House's lawyer, that he was a government employee working for the White House, not serving as the protector of one client, Richard Nixon. Now, fast forward to the current time. Don McGahn is in the John Dean role. He is the White House counsel. He is not Donald Trump's personal attorney. He is the White House counsel. So way back last fall, and particularly in November, Robert Mueller's investigation of the Russia interference in the 2016 election wanted to talk to the White House counsel about President Trump's attempts or interest in firing various people, including Robert Mueller. And at one point, we've been told, or it's been reported, that Don McGahn was told by the president, I want you to go fire Robert Mueller. And Don McGahn had to talk the president down and say, that's not really something that we should do or can do, and let's take another approach to this. And eventually the president decided, well, I'm just going to have a bunch of attorneys be my personal attorneys, and that cast has been constantly changing. Rudy Giuliani is the sort of public face of that cast of the president's personal attorneys. We can talk about Rudy Giuliani here in a moment, but back at the White House, Don McGahn is still the White House counsel. That's the guy who heads up a large office of lawyers work in the White House. And his job is to protect the interests of the presidency, the president as an official, the office of the president, not necessarily the individual who is holding that office. And so Robert Mueller sat him down for 30 hours. We really don't know what they talked about. But Donald Trump says he's confident that Don McGahn is a loyal friend to him and a loyal representative of him, and told Robert Mueller only things that would tend to make the president look totally not guilty of any crimes or of any obstruction of justice or any collusion with the Russians.
And when Chuck Todd talked about the possibility of a perjury trap, that gets us back to the president's now personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, responding by saying the truth is not the truth. Or maybe are there alternate facts, like Kellyanne Conway said? What are we to make of that statement by Rudy, former mayor of New York?
It's a statement that Rudy Giuliani will surely regret making.
We'll leave it there. We'll bring our callers into this, and let's go first to you, Vincent. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm you know, someone that certainly wants to see a thorough investigation here by Robert Mueller and his team, but I'm also somebody that's starting.
Somehow we.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead. I thought you dropped the call. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Did you hear my first comment?
Yeah, you said you're someone who has been following the Mueller investigation and wants it to proceed.
I'm following the Mueller investigation and fairly closely, but I'm also somebody that's starting to get a little fatigued by it. And even though I want to see a very thorough job done by his team, I'm wondering, you know, just how long this is going to take. And so it's a bit of a question and a comment. Question being, you know, how long do you think this might take? And the comment being, you know, someone like me that wants to see a thorough investigation is getting fatigued by it. There's probably others that, you know, have already kind of written it off. So, you know, that's kind of the question and comment there.
Yeah, Vincent, I appreciate the question. Let me go to Josh Gerstein on this. Certainly the administration has made it clear. In fact, we just mentioned Rudy Giuliani. He said this should be wrapped up by September 1st and things of that sort. We're getting a lot of pressure to wrap it up here. But, you know, these things take a long time. Your thoughts, Josh?
Yeah, they do. I mean, in terms of the length of various independent counsel, special counsel investigations, you always have some kind of a startup phase that drags things out. There are usually fights about getting access to documents or specific witnesses, all of which we've also seen here in the Mueller investigation. So it's not extraordinary for things to take this long. And then also remember, there's been a fair amount of action. We've had Mueller file a variety of cases. I think he's already obtained guilty pleas from five different individuals. He's got maybe half a dozen or more indictments that were returned. So it's not as if there's no discernible progress over the past year and 4 months or so since he's been in business. Of course, the White House would like to see this go away and is particularly concerned about news related to the investigation in the lead up to the midterm elections scheduled for November. And so when Giuliani says he wants this wrapped up by September 1st, some of that is alluding to the notion that generally speaking, investigators try not to take any kind of action that might have a political impact in the couple months leading up to an election. But the notion that this will be, quote unquote, wrapped up by September 1st is frankly ridiculous. I mean, Manafort has another trial scheduled for mid-September in Washington.
So just think about how long it took with the Watergate trial. I'm sorry, Josh, I want to get to another quick call here because we're coming up on a break. Elise, join us, please.
Yes. One of the things that nobody seems to be talking about, though it was raised on the Rachel Maddow show the other day, is that the people that Trump has threatened around security clearance are also on Mueller's witness list. I'm a trial lawyer in a different field, but I would never put someone on the stand who didn't have the opportunity to review notes and documents that they dealt with.
Elise, an excellent point. I'm sorry again to interrupt you, but we're coming up on a break here, and I want to hear what Ron Elving has to say. Ron?
Oh, that's right. If you are going to be called to testify in any one of Mueller's future proceedings, you're going to want to be able to get back to the information that you were basing your work on at the time that you're being questioned about. So if these people are denied their security clearance, that could become a factor in a future trial.
We leave it there. Ron Elving, thank you so much. Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent on the Washington Desk for NPR News. And thank you, Josh Gerstein, senior White House reporter for Politico. When we return, we're going to talk about carbs and diet. Stay tuned for that. I'm Michael Krasny.